Chapter 2: What is management and what do managers do? Left-click on these words to hear a sound file of this chapter. Definitions and related ideas. Some interesting questions to consider include the following. What is management? What is a manager? What is the process of management? What do managers do? What skills do managers need? There is no single or simple answer to these questions. If you ask managers these questions, you might get different answers, because different types of managers perform different functions. These questions will be answered in the following paragraphs. The best place to start is with some definitions of the concept of management. The definition used by the American Management Association is as follows. Management is working with and through other people to accomplish the objectives of both the organization and its members. This was a quote as cited in Montana, pages 1991, pages 2. Perhaps there were political considerations in the formulation of this definition, which is suggested by the words both the organization and its members. This definition of management essentially expresses an ideal, which is the goals of both the organization and members should be considered in the practice of management. Such an ideal is certainly highly commendable, but the definition may not quite represent the concept of management as it is often carried out. A simple dictionary definition is the function or duty of watching or guarding for the sake of proper direction or control. This was a quote Franklin Language Master Electronic Dictionary. This definition does not even mention people. A definition from a book on business defines management as the process of setting objectives and coordinating employees' efforts to obtain them. This was a quote Luckmans and Hojets P. G7. A definition from a textbook called Management is management planning, organizing, leading and controlling the people working in an organization and the ongoing set of tasks and activities they perform. This was a quote Hal Riegel and Slocum, pages 765. This definition was probably formulated to emphasize primary functions of management, such as planning, organizing, leading and controlling. The above leads us to the question, what is a manager? Essentially, a manager is a person that performs the functions mentioned in the above definitions. However, it can be argued that all managers do not necessarily perform all of the functions mentioned above. A definition from a typical textbook on organizational behavior is managers one individual who achieves goals through other people. This was a quote Robbins, PG 4. A more descriptive definition from a textbook on management is manager a person who allocates human and material resources and directs the operations of a department or an entire organization. This was a quote Hal Riegel and Slocum, pages 766. Obviously, none of the above definitions of management or manager are perfect, which is usually true of most definitions. Thus, I will offer my own definition in the following paragraphs. Management can be defined as a four-step process as follows. Management is the process of 1. Creating instructions, 2. Transmitting the instructions to others, 3. Motivating others to carry out the instructions, 4. Supervising to ensure that the instructions are effective and are properly carried out. The word instructions is used in a very general sense in this definition. It can be any of the following detailed step-by-step directions, a general advisory, and a general or precise set of rules, information that relates to the processes of planning or organizing, or any other information that relates to the work environment. Often the instructions are goal-related. That is, the instructions often are about plans on how to carry out goals, sub-goals, or how to perform work-related tasks. The word transmitting means communicating with others, which involves conveying the instructions. Motivating in this definition means any method used to get the workers to carry out the instructions, such as paying them a salary, giving them bonuses, advancing their occupational position, complimenting them when they do good work, making the work interesting, implying that they may be fired if they do not carry out the instructions, etc. The word supervising means in this definition observing and correcting the actions of others, especially in relation to how they are carrying out the instructions. That is, supervising means here a feedback and correction process, especially as it relates to the instructions conveyed by the management process. Incidentally, the above definition is very similar to the definition previously discussed, which was taken from Hal Riegel's book on management. We can see this if we examine it as follows: management planning, organizing, leading and controlling the people working in an organization and the ongoing set of tasks and activities they perform. This was a quote planning and organizing are equivalent to creating instructions in the definition I provided, because instructions were defined in such a way to include these processes. The word leading in my definition is represented by the words transmitting, communicating instructions, and motivating. In fact, the word leading is defined in Hal Riegel's book pages 765 on management as a managerial function of communicating with and motivating others to perform the tasks necessary to achieve the organization's objectives. This was a quote. The word controlling is defined in the same book pages 760 as the process by which a person, group, or organization consciously monitors performance and takes corrective action. This was a quote. In my definition, the word supervising means the same as the word controlling, as defined in Hal Riegel's book. Thus, we have precise definitions of the word management. Now we need to develop an exact definition for the word manager. A manager can simply be defined as an entity that performs the process of management as defined in any of the previous definitions. However, I will provide a definition that has three related components, which is as follows. A manager is an entity that 1. Transmits instructions to others, 2. Motivates them to carry out the instructions, 3. Supervises them to see that they properly carry out the instructions and maintain the behavior required by the work environment. The general way the words instructions, transmits and supervises were defined for management also applies to this definition of manager. The manager may or may not have created the instructions. If the manager is a top-level manager, he probably created the instructions he conveys to others. If the manager is a lower-level manager, and the instructions he conveys are the primary goals of the organization, he probably did not create them. However, a lower-level manager might create his own instructions that relate to the basic achievement of tasks that he supervises. If you examine the above definition of manager, you will notice that the word entity was used instead of the word person. However, entity in the definition usually, but not always, means a person. The reason the term entity was used, instead of a more specific word that relates to a human being, is theoretically the manager can be one of the following. A computer that has sensing equipment and software needed to perform the managerial functions. This might be quite feasible even with current technology in situations where the managing process is relatively simple. A group of people who collectively perform the managerial function as a single unit. This might be useful in situations where the managing task is too complicated for one individual, or where there is no person available who has all the skills needed to manage a department. One or more individuals and a computer system, which may have sensing equipment, that performs the managerial function as a single unit. This can be applied to situations where the managing task is extremely complicated. Of course, a manager is usually one human being. However, it can be potentially useful to know that other entities besides a person might be able to perform the managing function in some cases. Under certain conditions, one of the three alternatives on the above list might be more efficient, effective, and economical than one human being performing the duties of a manager. This will probably be more the case in the future as a result of the advanced development of computer technology. Although, the term manager can be defined as a general concept, as with the above definitions, managers do not perform the same specific functions. There are many different types of managers, who perform jobs that are not the same. Managers can be divided into at least 3 or 4 basic categorical levels, which are as follows. Hal Riegel and Slocum, pages 6-7. The fourth item on the list is my addition. Top managers. These managers direct the operation of the organization. They define the goals and plans for the rest of the organization. They generally serve on the board of directors of the large organization. Examples of top managers are the chief executive officer, president, and vice president. Middle managers. These managers are usually only needed in relatively large organizations. These managers receive the general policies and goals set by the highest level of management. Their primary job is to carry out the policies and goals of top management by translating them into specific objectives and plans for the first-line managers to carry out. Examples of middle managers are department heads and plant managers. First-line managers. These are the lower-level managers that supervise the employees who are involved with production of goods and services. The first-line manager's primary concern is production. Examples of first-line managers are sales managers and production supervisors. Workers that perform some management functions as part of their regular job. These employees may not actually be considered managers, but they perform some of the functions of a manager. These individuals generally supervise a few workers and they also perform the same or a similar job as the people they supervise. For example, a foreman who supervises a group of carpenters on a construction project will also do carpentry work. None of the above really describes what the process of management involves. This will be discussed under the next heading. The process of management. What are the basic functions of the process of management? There is no single answer to this question, but most textbooks would suggest that planning, organizing, leading, and controlling are the primary functions. These concepts are described in the following list. Planning. This involves setting organizational objectives and assessing ways to reach them. This includes the creation of the specific steps needed to obtain the organizational goals. This can involve the allocation of resources in relation to the goals and the related plans. Organizing. This involves the managerial process of creating the structure needed to carry out the goals and plans of the organization. It includes bringing workers, machinery, tools, and supplies together in an orderly way to achieve the goals of the organization. This includes creating departments and jobs that are needed to carry out the organizational objectives. Leading. This process involves communicating and motivating workers to carry out the tasks necessary to obtain the organizational goals. Controlling. This process involves monitoring the performance of the organization, its departments, its employees, and any other relevant factors, and initiating actions to correct problems or make improvements. A six-step description of the management process is found in Study Keys to Management, Montana, pages 1991, page 3, which is as follows. 1. Set objectives. This was a quote. 2. Assign responsibility and delegate authority. This was a quote. 3. Allocate resources. This was a quote. 4. Design controls and ways to monitor progress. This was a quote. 5. Solve problems as they occur. This was a quote. 6. Evaluate performance and outcome. This was a quote. A management process in terms of a methodology. In the following paragraphs, there is a version of the management process that is slightly different from the previous lists. This version is worded in terms of a six-step methodology, which is as follows. 1. Setting goals. This involves creating and choosing goals. The goals can be improvements, such as increased production, greater profits, the development of new products, improvements in old products, improving organizational structure and efficiency, etc. The goals can also be connected to a problem, such as how to reduce a high accident rate in the primary production facility, how to end a strike, how to settle a lawsuit, etc. The goals can also be how to avoid a problem that has not occurred, such as how to avoid strikes, accidents, and lawsuits. 2. Determining the feasibility of a goal. When management sets a goal, it can cost a considerable investment in effort, money, and time. Choosing inappropriate or unrealistic goals can put an organization into severe financial difficulties. When choosing or creating goals, it is necessary to consider the risks involved, which could involve the possible loss of large sums of money. Certain goals can also increase the risk of physical injury to personnel. Thus, this process should include excluding goals that are not likely to lead to a significant gain for the organization and goals that have a high risk factor associated with them. In general, the cost in terms of money, risk, time and effort should be evaluated to determine the desirability of setting a specific goal. That is, it is necessary to determine the feasibility of a goal. For simple goals, feasibility can often be estimated by careful thinking. For more complicated objectives, some testing and evaluation of test results are necessary. For very complicated goals, a team of experts might be required to obtain a reliable estimate of feasibility. 3. Developing the plans needed to obtain a goal. It is easy to set many types of goals, such as increasing productivity, increasing profits, reducing costs, etc. The difficult part is to devise a good set of plans on how to reach the goal. That is, when a goal is set, it is necessary to work out a set of plans that indicate what steps to take to obtain the goal. This will usually involve breaking the goal into many smaller goals, which are sub-goals of the primary objective. Then plans in the form of instructions and other information are created for each sub-goal. Then the instructions and related information are transmitted to the personnel that are to do the jobs necessary to obtain each sub-goal. This might be a relatively simple task for very simple goals, but it can be a very critical procedure for major organizational goals. Even if the goal is highly feasible and potentially highly beneficial, a poor set of plans can result in severe consequences for the organization. A poor set of plans can result in failure to obtain the goal, severe disruption of the organization, financial problems for the organization, etc. Thus, it is often advisable with major organizational goals to postpone the goal until adequate plans have been created. This is because, in general, the better the plans, the greater the chances of obtaining a successful outcome. That is, the better the plans, the greater the chances of obtaining the goal without excessive costs in terms of money, time, risk and effort. The quality of the plans will most likely be greater if experienced personnel work on the plans. If much expert information is used in devising the plans, And if the plans are developed, tested and evaluated over an extended period of time, often the quality of the plans that are ultimately achieved will be determined by the knowledge and experience of the experts that can be obtained to work on the plans. Of course, with simple goals the situation is much easier. That is, the plans can be created in the mind and tested and evaluated in a common sense fashion. If good plans cannot be created, it might be advisable in some cases to abandon the goal, rather than to try to reach it with inadequate plans. This is especially the case if the goal involves much money, risk, time, and effort. Note the above three steps results in a set of instructions as the term was defined in my definition of management. Essentially, the above is the process of creating instructions as I defined the concept earlier in this text. The above process can also be defined as planning. Thus, the methodology is consistent with the definitions previously discussed. This will become more apparent in the coming paragraphs. For transmitting, communicating the instructions and other information to the specific individuals that are to carry out the work needed to achieve the various sub-goals, that is, the plans that were worked out in step 3 consist of instructions and other information needed to achieve specific parts of the primary goal. This information must be sent to the specific individuals who have the inclination, abilities, skills and knowledge needed to carry out specific segments of the goal. This process involves a high degree of communication skills. There are many areas where this communications process can fail. The information can be transmitted to the wrong individuals, the instructions can be misunderstood, the information transmitted from managers to workers can be insulting or threatening in some cases, etc. When the information is transmitted in written form, it may not be read or only partly read, it may be considered unimportant by the reader, and when written material is misunderstood, there is no immediate feedback that would suggest the need for further explanation. However, failures in communications can often be corrected if the misunderstanding is spotted by noting the responses of the listener or reader. Note the above was defined in my definition of management as one of the major functions, which was transmitting the instructions to others. 5. Motivating the workers to carry out the instructions and to follow the rules of the work environment. This motivating process is primarily done by paying people to do a job. That is, the employee is made aware that he will obtain money if he follows the directions of management, and he will not obtain money if he does not. That is, he will lose his job. For this reality to operate, adequate supervision is required. However, there are many employees that will do excellent work with little or no supervision, because of their interest in the work or because of their self-discipline and ethical standards. Employees of this type are highly desirable, but in general relying on the employee's own motivating forces and nothing more is quite risky. Such reliance can result in paying employees for doing little or no work, in some cases. Another method of motivating workers is to give them bonuses if their work has been fruitful for the organization over a fixed interval of time, such as a year. Bonuses are probably most effective as a motivating technique when it is not easy or possible to determine if the employee is doing adequate work in terms of a day-by-day output. Examples of such occupations are traveling sales work and certain types of occupations that involve experimental research. Another method that involves money as a reward is a fixed commission for a specific quantity of work completed by a worker. Some workers only work on a commission basis, which might reduce the need for supervising the worker. If the worker does little work, he gets little pay. This method is probably best when supervising is very difficult or impossible, such as with traveling sales. In general, money is not the only motivating force used by management. There are many other ways of motivating people to follow the directions of management and properly perform their jobs. This becomes apparent when we examine volunteer organizations, which do not pay many or all of their workers. Basically, the job itself and various factors associated with the work environment can be a strong motivating force in some cases. That is, jobs can be structured in such a way so that they are self-motivating and rewarding. There are two ways that jobs can be made more self-motivating and rewarding. One way is to remove undesirable components and the other way is to add desirable components. Undesirable components are factors that essentially reduce motivation and generally include anything that makes the workers uncomfortable or discontented. Such components might include uncomfortable levels of stress, failure, a hostile work environment, critical responses associated with hostility, excessive levels of work, tasks the worker finds boring or uninteresting, high temperatures, high humidity, high noise levels, etc. Desirable components are motivating forces and include tasks the worker finds interesting, enjoyable and pleasantly challenging activities or challenges that lead to successful outcomes. In addition, a friendly environment can also be a strong motivating force in many situations. Some people even work as a volunteer because they have an opportunity to work in a friendly environment, which can offer the opportunity of finding friends and potential mates. Of course, the components listed in the above paragraph as undesirable and likely to reduce motivation might in certain cases have the opposite effect. For example, some individuals might work more efficiently in an environment that is somewhat hostile, because a friendly environment can distract some people from doing their job. And the same idea, of course, would apply to the components listed as desirable and motivating. Certain factors that may increase motivation to do a good day's work might have the opposite effect under some circumstances. A technique, which was briefly implied, two paragraphs above, which can motivate, is the setting of challenging goals that are likely to lead to a successful conclusion. This is most likely to be effective if specific goals and/or sub-goals are set for each worker by the manager. If goals are set for an entire group, the technique may be less successful. If the goals set constantly lead to failure, the most probable result will be frustration and a reduction in motivation in relation to the work defined by the goal. Another method of motivating people to carry out the instructions and follow the rules of the work environment is to threaten them with punishment. This method is often implied in most work environments. As already stated, most workers are aware that they will be fired if they do not do their jobs. Of course, there are other ways of punishing workers that fail to carry out their job-related roles and duties. Often bosses and managers simply scold workers who fail to carry out all their responsibilities. There is a major difficulty with the technique described in the above paragraph. Punishment can often lead to hostility and/or serious conflict between management and the workers. This is more likely to result if the worker believes the punishment was unfair, and in fact the punishment may sometimes be unfair. When there is one person judging the behavior of another, which often happens without having all the needed information, there is a good chance of a manager misjudging a worker. This is likely to happen if the manager has some prejudicial beliefs about the worker's sex, race, religion, age, etc. Even if the manager does not have any such prejudicial beliefs, the worker who is punished might believe that the punishment is partly or totally the result of a prejudicial attitude of the manager. Thus, punishment as a method of motivating can often be quite dysfunctional. Hence, when punishment is used, it should be used with extreme caution. Note steps 4 and 5 together can be defined as leading. That is, these two steps involve communicating and motivating to perform the tasks needed to achieve the goals of management, which is defined as leading in the glossary of Hal Riegel's book on page 765 as follows. The managerial function of communicating with and motivating others to perform the tasks necessary to achieve the organization's objectives. This was a quote 6 feedback and correction of the goal-related activities work associated with obtaining the goal, as well as all the steps mentioned in this list, should be carefully monitored and evaluated as the goal-related tasks proceed. This will provide information that will indicate if the goal is being achieved, if the goal can be reached in a more efficient way, if there is excessive risk involved with the goal, if the workers understand their instructions, if the workers are doing their jobs, etc. If there is an indication of a difficulty, the objective should be to try to make appropriate corrections. That is, one or more of the following may have to be modified slightly, greatly, or totally changed to obtain success. The goal plans to obtain the goal, the methods of communicating the plans, equipment, techniques, workers assigned to the project, the amount of money and other resources invested in the project, etc. Note the above, step 6, can be described as supervising to ensure that the instructions are effective and are properly carried out. This terminology was used in my definition of management. Step 6 of this methodology can also be defined as controlling, which is defined in Hal Riegel's book on management on page 761 as follows. The process by which a person, group, or organization consciously monitors performance and takes corrective action. This was a quote. The 6 steps can be represented and summarized in an abbreviated form as follows. 1. Goal setting. 2. Determining feasibility. 3. Creating plans on how to obtain goals. 4. Communicating. 5. Motivating. 6. Feedback and correction. The 6 steps can be used to define the concept of management as follows. Management is a process that involves 1. Setting goals. 2. Determining the feasibility of goals. 3. Creating plans to reach goals. 4. Communicating with workers about the plans. 5. Motivating the workers to carry out the plans, and 6. Supervising to obtain feedback and make any needed corrections. Note 1 can argue that managers do not always follow these 6 steps, but the definition does not say that they do. The definition says management is a process that involves. This is of course one of many possible idealized definitions of the concept of management. It is obvious that many organizations, especially smaller ones, do not always follow all these steps. This is especially true with step 2, determining the feasibility of goals, especially if the goal is a minor one. However, a careful examination of the definition and the way the six steps were defined will reveal a very close agreement with the other definitions of management presented in this text. But the unique wording probably would offer a somewhat different perspective and insight into the concept of management. This is probably true of all the definitions that were presented. Each one offers a somewhat different view and set of insights into the process of management. End of note. The above management methodology in terms of a series of questions, in relation to a problem-solving method. Note this section contains a problem-solving method for both problems and goals, which is based on the management methodology discussed above. The method that is described should be carefully read at least two times, because it may seem somewhat complicated at first. The above methodology can be put in a simple form, consisting of a series of questions, which are presented in a list at the end of this paragraph. The idea here is to answer the relevant questions on the list when developing a management-related goal or solving a managerial problem. This is to be done with the aim of obtaining your goal or a solution to your problem. The questions on the list that are not relevant to your efforts should be ignored or changed so they are relevant to the goal or problem that you are working on. You should add your own questions to the list that relate specifically to the goal or problem that you are working on. Each question that is answered should be done with writing. Each answer should be one paragraph or more in length, with the question serving as an introductory topic sentence. This method is best done on a computer, with word processing software. This permits organizing and reorganizing of the information that is derived with the methodology. The questions are as follows. 1. Goal setting. What is the goal? How can you describe the goal so others will understand it? 2. Determining feasibility. Is the goal feasible? How can you determine the feasibility of the goal? What are the risks associated with the goal? How much will it cost to reach the goal? What is the most optimistic estimate? What is the most pessimistic estimate? What is the most realistic estimate? What are the most likely benefits that will be obtained if the goal is reached? 3. Creating plans to reach the goal. What are the sub-goals that relate to the primary goal? How can these sub-goals be used to create a plan to obtain the primary goal? How can you work out a set of plans that will lead to the goal? What information will help you work out a good set of plans? How can you obtain expert information or advice to create the plans? The following questions must be answered after the plans have been worked out. Can the plans be improved? If so, how can the plans be improved? How can the plans be expressed in terms of specific steps or job-related tasks, which are needed to obtain the goals? Which employees can carry out these goal-related steps or tasks? 4. Communicating. Are the plans in a form that can be understood by others? Are the plans ready to be transmitted to the employees? If not, how can the plans be modified so they can be successfully conveyed to the appropriate employees? Who are the individuals that are to carry out specific tasks designated in the plan? Do they understand the instructions and other information that relates to their tasks? 5. Motivating. How can you motivate the workers to carry out the plans? Are the workers paid or are they volunteers? Are they paid enough for the work you are requesting of them? Can you make the work you want the workers to do less stressful and more rewarding? Can you make the work more interesting? Can you make the work pleasantly challenging? Can you set any challenging goals that can be successfully achieved by the workers? Can you offer any additional rewards, such as bonuses for workers that effectively carry out the plans needed to achieve the goal? 6. Feedback and correction. How are the goal-related tasks progressing? Is the monitoring of these tasks adequate? If not, how can the monitoring be improved? Are there any difficulties related to the goal or the goal-related tasks? If there are any difficulties, how can they be corrected? Can the goal be improved? Can any of its sub-goals be improved? Can the plans needed to reach the goal or sub-goals be improved? Can the communications related to achieving the goal be improved? Can the method of monitoring progress be improved? Can the method of evaluating progress be improved? The skills a manager needs. From the above paragraphs, we can get a fairly good idea of the skills that a manager should have. Some general skills are technical, interpersonal, conceptual, communication, and critical thinking. Hal Riegel, Don N. Slocum, Jr., John W. 1996, pages 26 to 27. The list at the end of this paragraph contains a more detailed set of abilities and skills that under the most ideal conditions a manager would have. Keep in mind that if you do not have one or more of the items on the list, they can most likely be developed with study and practice. The list is as follows. The skills needed to work well with people are required. That is, human relation skills are necessary. Knowledge of human behavior in relation to the work environment is needed. Good communication skills are required. Good writing skills are of great value, especially in relation to explaining needs, problems and solutions in written reports. Knowledge of the structure and lines of communication of the organization in relation to obtaining funding or other resources for a department or project that you are managing is needed. This will differ from one organization to another. However, the basic idea is to have the knowledge of organizational behavior needed to figure out the best lines of communication for your proposal for resources. Technical skills that relate to the specific area and type of workers that are to be managed are required. Problem-solving skills are needed. A good understanding of how the organization functions, in relation to its members, its employees, its lines of communications, its facilities, physical layout of the buildings, machinery, tools, etc. An understanding of the economics involved with the organization is required. An understanding of the product and/or services produced by the organization is needed. A good understanding of organizational behavior and theory is needed. A good understanding of the principles of management are required. Conclusion. Thus, in this chapter much was covered. The chapter started with definitions of management and manager, and proceeded to a problem-solving methodology, and ended with some of the skills needed by a manager. This chapter was essentially centered on the concept of management. In the next chapter, the primary focus will be centered on the organization. And just as was done in this chapter for management problems, a problem-solving methodology will be developed that focuses on difficulties from a perspective of organizational behavior. This paper was originally submitted for a course on organizational behavior, but it is included here, in a slightly modified form, because it fits in well with the theme of this book.